Touchwood files have been activated. Enjoy the show.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back, maybe Clarence Brown. Mr. Brown, how are you?
I am doing great, and as always, I'm glad we're back in the thick of it, back to things here, and, you know, ready to record some Torchwood, as we do.
Yes, indeed. And it is my esteemed pleasure, as always, to say welcome back, Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
You're very kind, sir. You're very kind. I'm pretty lightly taped together at this point, but, hanging on. And I told several people on the social medias today that I am looking forward to just being with the two of you tonight. I felt like I need medicine, and this is the medicine. So we got here just in time.
And as I recently discovered, that social media is Blue Sky now.
It is indeed. Yeah. When you say any and all social medias, that includes the Discussing Who channel presence, whatever. What do we say on Blue Sky? Anyway, we're on there. So
yes, we are indeed. I myself personally, for my X account, I went in and started the download your archives earlier tonight. And, you know, I'm just going to put it out there, gentlemen, unless you guys tell me differently on this live recording, I'm putting you on the spot, Discussing Who will be doing the same thing. And we will be blue skying, we will be threading, we'll be Instagramming, we'll be Facebooking, but we're just going to X the X.
Yes. There you go. I have learned, while joining Blue Sky, I have learned the happy coinage Exodus. And I just love that there is what's going on now is a mass Exodus. It's beautiful.
But it's really interesting from what I've seen on Blue Sky. Honestly, it reminds me a lot of the old days of Twitter. It really, does. In the, you know, early, you know, 2010s, you know, back when it was a new connection platform, not a let's raise some ad revenue platform.
Yeah. The simplicity of it is
that's
what
it
makes it interesting.
It just, I think that's the word. It's just, I don't know. And will it last? Who knows?
Who knows?
but I just know that they're starting out with kind of a different covenant with the, you know, with the users.
Yep. And I think it is the number one as of this recording, as on the 19th of November, it is right there at the top of the Android and Apple chart. So download it, connect with us, Discussing Who. So Lee, you shared something, talk a little bit of news, and I don't know if you watched this. I saw it, and I think it's kind of timely considering what we're reviewing right now, but apparently John Barrowman has said that he has been blacklisted by Things BBC. Is that, am I understanding correctly?
At least that's what the article said. And, you know, I read it on the internet, so it must be so. But that does match with other things that we've heard from other people. And I understand why and how it happened. But, and you know, my wife and I had a very interesting conversation about this the other day. You know, she's a media psychologist who studies these kinds of things, relationships we have with fictional characters and things like that. And I told her that I think the three of us were all rallying behind John. We were saying, no, we think, you know, don't cancel him. He's got some weird behavior, but come on, it's John Barrowman. And I had the feeling that if we didn't love Captain Jack, who is a fictional character, maybe we wouldn't be so quick to support somebody who has been really misbehaving in sexually aggressive ways in the dressing rooms of shows that he's on. If it was anybody else, I would say, you know,
that's fair.
Yeah, I think he's done. He's out. But I want to stick up for him, and I think it's because I love Jack. But, you know, we've also seen, I mean, we feel like we know John, too, from personal appearances and so on. It's like, he's just, he's sorry. You know, he said, I'm sorry, which don't make it right. So it's complicated, isn't it?
I also believe there's a difference from, of course, a lot of things that he's allegedly have done have been pretty bad, but, you know, just not proper. I'll say it that way. And of course, if it was something illegal that he's done, we might be a little less forgiving as well. So I think you can take that into a context a little bit. Maybe if it was something legal, we would be like, but then different times, are we just going to give it a pass because it was different times? You got to look at that too. So it's kind of hard. I do feel like we're in a weird space where we're in a space of second chances, but we're also in the space of holding people accountable. And you know,
right.
Who are we giving a second chance? Who are we holding accountable? I think it's kind of up in the air because I've seen it go both ways many, many times.
Right.
But yeah, it's a tough spot to be in as a fan.
Right.
All right. So I'm going to try to say this as generically as I possibly can.
No, I think we've blown our PG rating here. So
No. But well, I made a statement before we began recording that I was going to say something at the beginning and not, not get into it when we were recording discussing who. But I think the way I want to say it is we should not, I don't think, reward bad behavior. But when you do reward bad behavior, then it makes it harder, I think, to, with good conscience, throw stones at other people. And I know I'm being so generic, but I'm doing that for a purpose because I don't really want to get into what I mean by that. But you guys know what I mean by that. But when society as a people reward bad behavior, then who's to say whose bad behavior needs to be punished?
That's right.
I kind of have a problem with, regardless of if we like an actor, if we don't like an actor, if we like a character, we don't like a character, or a writer, or a whoever, is how can you punish one and then reward others?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at too, kind of a selective accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It does depend on the how egregious what was done was. And also I look at somebody like Jonathan Majors, where it's kind of arguable. If it seems like he's was in a pretty messed up relationship, but he's been ostracized completely.
Yes.
From Hollywood. And he, I guess he got convicted on something, but we have a video. I don't know. It's a weird world we're living in, is what I'm trying to say.
And who's to say his conviction was not a plea bargain, you know, that was, or whatever it was, but it was.
But we've seen worse, and people get nothing done to them. So I don't know, man. Selective accountability. I don't know, man. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird. We could talk about that all night, I think.
Well, whoever, what is it? He who is without sin may
throw cast the first stone. Yeah.
Yes.
You're right, though. We can talk about this all tonight on a very special Torchwood.
Yes. But speaking
of the sins of John Barrowman.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
It's brutal
at the end of this episode we're going to talk about. Oh, man.
Well, all I know is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Kind of what Lee was saying just a minute ago, the fact of whether we're casting stones at people, whatever we're doing, the fact that we're on here together brings joy to my heart. It's all joy to the world because we got a Children in Need special, little bitty clip of the Christmas special. So without going into any details, no spoilers here, we do see a name pop up from Boom. Mm-hmm. In this little spoiler.
And many other episodes.
Yes, and that has also appeared in series one and et cetera and so forth back in 2005. So
maybe I just didn't think that's interesting.
Okay, spoilers, Villain Guard is popped back up.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
You remind me that I when you asked me, you know, I knew you were going to say, how you doing? When we signed on this episode, and I was going to respond, did you have the ham and cheese toastie and a pumpkin latte? I missed my opportunity. Anyway, that apparently is going to be a joke for the Christmas special.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on when my room is. That's all
exactly.
I can say.
Not where, but when.
But when.
There's some interesting ideas just that are teased in this little bit. Mm. And I enjoyed that a lot. It's yeah.
Timey-wimey.
Timey-wimey, definitely.
Well, you know, it said that Moffat had said that this is the last thing he's written, the last thing he's ever going to write for Doctor Who. And my thought was, oh, yeah, he's already written his last submission for next series that we don't know about yet or whatnot. So.
That's right.
All right. So, gentlemen, any other things before we move on? Any more news? Anything else going on for you before we move on?
I don't think so.
All right. So, for everyone listening, if you have not seen They Keep Killing Susie, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Affirmative.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
And I killed Sparky, too.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review They Keep Killing Susie. This is the 8th episode of the first series of Torchwood, first airing on the 3rd of December, 2006. So, some review. Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you. Some review. What say ye?
Strangely, from 2006, I didn't remember this episode at all. So it was just full of surprises. And that's cool. It gives us a chance to see the, I think, remarkable Indira Varma again, who was, you know, dead. But here she is in this episode again. And I just think turning in a great performance. She's a great actor. I wish she'd turn up on Doctor Who at some point.
We'll keep your bird eyes out, you know, because she might have a bird brain performance.
Okay. Well, I'll watch out for that in the future.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, I thought this was intense, and more of that sort of moral pondering about death and life, really. So, as we said back in our first episode talking about Torchwood, we're going to get into it with Torchwood. What do things mean? What does anything mean? What are the foundations of our relationships? What matters and what doesn't? You know, what are the standards that we hold ourselves and other people to? It's all gets called into question in Torchwood. So, what about you? What are your gut reactions to this one?
I'm right there with you guys. Did not remember a lot of this one. Definitely a lot of twists in this episode. Some interesting motivations. Seems like she's holding Torchwood in a lot of contempt by the time she starts to make her way back. But yeah, I thought it was a wonderful episode. It kind of, you know, as you mentioned, Lee, it was very, very intense the entire time, and kind of kept you on the edge of your seat. And when we found out some of the logic of what's actually going on, even more interesting. So, yeah, I very much enjoyed this episode. I can't wait to get into some of the details.
So before I give my thoughts, I want to give a quick shout out. Our friend Larry Irby from Discussing Trek wanted to join us tonight. He was unable to, but he did send a message, and I'll use this as his summary view. He said, "Let everyone know that this is one of my favorite episodes because it has so much in it that pertains to the series later on." So interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. So
I don't know what that is either. So now it's got me curious. But for me, this is oddly one of the ones I remembered. I remembered that Susie came back. I remembered that it had to do with the glove. And I remembered that she was bad. Now, everything else, I did not remember, but I did remember that and the Cyberwoman episode were the only two ones that I really kind of remembered, you know, from this series. I agree with everything the both of you said. This was very deep, very dark, and very somber, to be honest with you, and very, very almost depressing, but we'll you know, like get into it. So the first thing I want to get into, speaking of getting into it, is how known is Torchwood? And I know we've had this similar discussion in previous episodes of there being different branches of Torchwood, but is Torchwood supposed to be like UNIT and everybody knows that it exists, or is it in the shadows? Thoughts?
Well, from the episode specifically, it seems like that it's a very known entity, at least in the law enforcement side of things, where they kind of think they're a-holes and just come in. And you know how you always have this in a lot of American shows where it's the local sheriff and then the FBI comes in and takes over the investigation. That's kind of what they are in this world, or what they seemingly are in this world. So it seems like they're known to a lot of the law enforcement and very much hated as well.
Certainly resented. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Lee, what do you think?
I thought the same thing, that clearly the law enforcement community, at least in Cardiff, knows them, and they know that for whatever reason that's never been explained to them, Torchwood can just do whatever they want. But does that mean they know what Torchwood is exactly and what they do? I don't think so.
Agree.
So if they really knew. But yeah, I'll go ahead and tell you that my favorite scene in this was the CID people at the police station laughing their butts off at Torchwood being locked in their facility. I just thought that was a hilarious comeuppance, and you know, and then their chief of police, then she goes on and helps them. She does everything she can to help them, so she doesn't just hang up on them. So it's just a good thing all around. So that was very big of her, I thought.
So we're talking about them working with the police and whatnot. So tell me this, how important, in your opinion, is it for someone to have an outlet, someone that they can talk to about work? And then what does one do when they can't discuss work? Lee, I see you shaking your head. Go first.
Well, that's been my situation this week. I've just needed some people that I could talk to. And I said on social media the other night that I'm having a nervous breakdown. It's not too much of an exaggeration. So I've just been hanging in there to spend some time talking with the two of you. Not even to undump my many fascinating troubles on you, but just it's important. We're social creatures, even those of us who are introverts and are often isolated, or maybe that's more true for us. But you gotta. I think that when Susie explains that she did all this to Max because she needed somebody to talk to, I think a lot of us out there in the audience are just going, okay, I see that. And then she wipes his memory. And then she does it again again and again and again. And you're thinking, okay, that's excessive, but I still understand what she's doing. I still know why she would need to do that. What I think.
It's certainly a good case where they kind of played the long game with this one. I think they did a good job, because we've seen it again. We've seen it with Gwen, and we've seen it with Owen having to confide in each other. We've seen it with Sato, where she is kind of going through the same thing because she has no one to talk to. So it's definitely something that they've pounded on this entire series up until this point. And we're just seeing another case where yet another member was kind of out on the island by herself and needed someone to talk to, and uses this, what is a compound be something to erase someone's memory once she actually talked to them. So, yeah, I definitely liked how they came to that conclusion in this episode. And also the notion that the rest of the members of Torchwood think it's no possibility that she would be in this group talking to these people. But yeah, she had to find an outlet. She had to find somewhere to go. So yeah, it made a lot of sense. And they played the long game on that.
You know, it made me think first, you know, bringing it back home and looking at ourselves like we're doing, you know, in the last year, I had a coworker that I was on a business trip with, and it was my coworker and their spouse, and me and the coworker were telling the spouse about the situation at work that was evident to me for years and years and years. And this was the first time the husband had ever heard, husband had ever heard of what we were telling him. And my thought was, the two of you literally don't discuss work at home. You know,
clearly,
you know, this is obvious that you clearly don't discuss work. So that was an interesting takeaway for me, that I think it is the person and their relationship with other people that they may be able to compartmentalize whatever that is and just box it off and then go home and box it. I can't, you know, I've got to have that outlet. But that leads into my next question. What if we were working for the CIA or for UNIT or for Torchwood or whatever, and you can't tell somebody? That makes what Susie did a little more of a, not necessarily an okay thing, but you can kind of understand the desire that she had, not less understanding the action.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, I think Lisa said a minute ago, I mean, she had to have somebody to talk to. So we can't really fault her for what she did. Now, of course, we know it's a bad thing, but in light of what she may have been going, I mean, we saw with Gwen, in just a short amount of time, how it was affecting her. And imagine doing this for years and years and years and no one to talk to, although we do get a hint in this episode that her and Owen may have been a thing, sort of.
Well, so. I think definitely, yeah. Because she asks Gwen point blank, have you slept with Owen? And Gwen doesn't really answer, but she says, so you've replaced me in every way.
Wow.
Yes. So let's talk about Susie for a moment. Clarence, I'll take this to you first. Do you think she was evil? That's my first question. And then it's a two-part question. So this is first.
Oh, that's easy. Yes. Yes.
All right.
I mean,
was she always evil, or did the gauntlet corrupt her?
By the actions of the end of the episode with her father, I'm inclined to think she was always evil. Because they kind of play it up in this episode as if the reason she was experimenting with the gauntlet is because she may have been trying to find a way to prolong her father's life or something to that effect. But we get to that moment where she finally has dragged Gwen all the way back to her father's hospital bed only to do the unthinkable. So
yeah,
that kind of leads me to either the gauntlet has affected her to the point of no return, or she's just a bad person. And I'm inclined to think she's just a bad person.
Revenge, that act, that revenge murder on her father. I mean, she identifies it as revenge. So we have to think that she has grown up in some kind of personal hellscape.
Yeah.
So she may have never had a chance to, I don't know. So, you know, that's a nature nurture thing, I suppose. But yeah, I think she's had some severe problems for a long, long time. But, you know, just as we were talking about this, I was realizing we were forgiving her because we understand that her need to talk to Max about Torchwood and then to wipe his memory. But by the end of the episode, do we not know that she has figured out that repeated exposure to retcon will turn you into a raging psychopath and somebody that you can manipulate? So she, talk about the long game. That's at least part of what she was doing with Max from the beginning.
And it's funny that you said that particular phrasing, because the part that I did not mention of my question was a simple statement. This was the long game.
Yeah.
You know, this is, in my opinion, I think, like what you guys said, she was evil from the beginning, or she was inclined based upon whatever it was that happened to her. If those things were put in front of you that might would give you to go to the dark side, she went to the dark side because of things that she was given. Now, if she didn't have the gauntlet, she could have had a gun. You know, there's several different ways you could have gone. She could have poisoned and she could have done whatnot. There's plenty of things that she could have done, but Torchwood was the opening that she needed to do the things that she did, in my opinion.
Yeah. And if not for the very, a line at the very end that they mentioned, I thought the long game idea of her killing herself only to be resurrected later I thought even if that was a long game, it just seems like a weird way to go about it just to live again. But the one line at the end where if they did not sever the connection or destroy the gauntlet, that she had the possibility of being another Jack, or at least that's what it sounded like to me.
Mm-hmm.
If that was her goal from the very beginning, I'm like, bravo, bravo, because it makes more sense that she would go through all this in an attempt to have eternal life or something there's about.
So, Lee, you brought up in a previous review that this series seems to be, or not seems to be, is presenting that death means nothing. You know, once you die, you disappear. I mean, is the feeling that I'm getting. Why did you think from a writing perspective or a head writer or whatever showrunner, however you want to call it, but why do you think they made the decision to present this in the Doctor Who universe, as it be, as death is finite? You know, death, there's nothing after. Why take that hopeless way of looking at it when Doctor Who seems to always be so much more hopeful?
Well, that's a good question. And again, I think we could do a whole episode about that, because I do think that Doctor Who, for all of its flights of fantasy, is still rooted in the idea that there's nothing in the universe for which there isn't a scientific explanation, you know, either that we just don't know yet, as the ancient Greeks posited in the first place. Maybe not everything is knowable. So there's no reason to believe in the supernatural. There's no reason to believe in God or heaven or hell or any of those things. And so if anything, this episode kind of breaks that rule, because really, if you're going to be serious about that point of view, you'd expect that people who have been dead and then get a chance to talk about it will say there's nothing. There's nothing on the other side. Susie says, and Susie lies, but Susie says there's something moving in the darkness. And she says to Jack, and it's coming for you, which I think is what Larry was referring to, about things that are going to pay off later in the series. But in any case, yeah, I think it's important to the overall tone of this show. The death is the end, and what we have of life is what we're experiencing in this instant by instant. And for people like Jack, who have been given the gift of immortality, what he experiences is a curse. Being born and dying is the way it's supposed to be. That's what your life is supposed to be, says Torchwood. Jack is the aberration, and he didn't like it.
All right, so let me pivot that question to you, Clarence. How has Jack coped, in your opinion, as being this immortal being that he now is? How do you see him having coped from the time we saw him in Bad Wolf to where we see him today? How do you think he's coped? And if so, how has that changed him?
I don't think he has coped. Like every other character we mentioned that has not had anyone to talk to and that's holding everything inside, I think Jack is yet another member of Torchwood that's kind of holding everything inside. Now, I think maybe some of those traits of him holding inside has made him a good leader in some aspects, to where he doesn't question in his mind what's right or wrong. He's ready to exact judge, jury, and executioner, as we kind of see in a myriad of episodes already. So I feel like the way that it has affected him, it is sort of similar to everybody else. He's holding it in, and I think it shows in a little bit of his command style.
Interesting. Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that completely, Clarence. I think you've put your finger right on it. He's coping as best he can. But has he come to a place of peace about himself and his existence? Not by a long shot.
And you know, I'm interested now more than ever with this conversation to get to these next seasons of Torchwood, because if I were to look at, well, I'll say this in two ways. If I were to look at Captain Jack in the 2005 series when he met Rose and the Doctor compared to now? And I would answer my own question. I would say that Jack is angry. He may not say it, but I see John Barrowman portraying the character differently, and I feel like there's a unsaid anger in some of the things that he does. You know, a little, this forcefulness seems to be built on some, I'm mad about something, you know, and it could be, I'm mad over the fact of, I don't really know what happened to me, but I can't die. Because I really don't think he at this point knew that the bad wolf Rose resurrected him at this point. I don't think he knows that. I think he just knows he can't die.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how I think Jack has coped. The second part of it is, and another reason I want to get to these other second series, third series, fourth series, is the way that they present Jack on screen when he returns to Doctor Who compared to this is a lot more of the happy-go-lucky, let's have fun Jack than what we're seeing here. So that I think is very interesting. So let me ask you this. We're talking about death and how humanity and Jack are dealing with this idea of being resurrected. And we see how Susie dealt with the resurrection. How does this exploration of life after death differ from the concept of regeneration and how the Doctor copes with regeneration?
Well, you don't change. It's just you again.
True.
So that's a big thing. Yeah.
But could we also argue that the Doctor does change, but is still you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've argued that in print. Yeah. But it's the circumstances are the same. You have the same body, often with a gaping hole in it. And yeah, it's just like, okay, we're back. All right. It's you didn't die. You just, somebody just hit pause. Yeah, it's not the same. Yeah, and you wonder if so your chances for change, for growth, are going to have to come from somewhere else. I'm just thinking out loud.
No. That's it's an odd but interesting question.
It is.
Clarence, what do you think?
I agree with what Lee's saying. I think with the Doctor, there's a chance for him with each regeneration, with each regeneration to reinvent themselves. Whether it's because of looking different or sounding different or being ginger or not, there's something about the change in attitude, the cadence, the slight, well, actually massive sometimes, but nuances of how he acts. There's an opportunity to reinvent themselves with each regeneration. So like you're going from high school to college, you can reinvent yourself if you would like. You go from the college to the workforce, you can reinvent yourself if you like. But it's like Jack is kind of being robbed of that opportunity. He's living another, he gets a chance to restart his life, but he's right back in the same situation he was before with no opportunity to really change. I mean, I guess he could if he wanted to, but, you know, it doesn't readily present itself.
Yeah, because it reminds me that our other immortal in this world is Lady Me, who has reinvented herself time and time again. She's been a bad guy. She's been a good guy.
Yes.
So Jack has that opportunity, I guess.
But maybe it is what Clarence hit on with the regeneration. And this is another question into itself or unto itself. Does the Doctor have the ability to change within one single incarnation? Or is the change dependent upon the regeneration? But that's a question for another day. But maybe with the human being given that immortality, it's literally, and deep context here, he who is to win will also lose, is you can't change but other than yourself, meaning you've got that one tablet. You know, you can, you can't wipe it clean and repaint something else on it. Yeah. You've got that one tablet. You can clean it up. You can polish it off. You can do whatever, but it's still that one tablet. However old it gets, it's still that one tablet. And maybe with the doctor, you're literally wired for change.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Think about Jack, me, Highlander, whatever immortal person you're thinking about. There is a certain amount of brooding that goes along with that long living lifespan, that just the weight of it, in a sense. And it's somehow the doctor, interesting about the doctor's character, somehow the doctor's been able to shed a lot of that. And I'm not sure why. I mean, it's interesting we talk about it now, but it could be the different look. That could be part of it. But for the large part, it seems like they've been able to shed a lot of that brooding that is associated with a lot of other long-living characters from other sci-fi or fantasy or whatever you want to look at.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to the doctor here, and I know this is going in a weird way, but I think because of the way this episode presents life after death or life and death, I just think that this is an interesting angle. Maybe with humanity, we are taught from early childhood that you're going to grow up and die. You know, as morbid as that sounds, you know, we're taught when people, either relatives or people your family knows, that when someone passes away, that death is a part of life. Maybe from where the doctor was from originally or growing up, if you are subject to the mentality of you have regeneration, you're going to change. You know, that's why psychologically it's so much more not acceptable, but psychologically enabling themselves to cope with it because you've been ingrained that regeneration happens. Whereas most humans don't get to get what Jack has or me has, or bringing it back to the story, what Susie attempts to have.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to the writers in this episode because it was something really cool and bad for Gwen, but fun, I think, of the idea of, oh, I killed myself by a very brutal headshot, you know, wound, and slowly mine is healing, and it's appearing over there on Gwen. I was like, oh man, it's so brutal. But a nice touch for the writers, I think.
Gwen says, "What's happening?" She says, "You've been shot in the head. Believe me, it hurts." Yeah.
Mm. Slowly.
So.
So, gentlemen, before we get into our favorite scene, favorite quote, and final rating, do either of you have any more subjects, topics that we have not brought up?
I wanted to mention, we got a very nice shot of the Millennium Center, like when we flash back to Susie trying to kill Jack and herself. And it reminded me, I don't know if we ever talk about this on here, but when I was there, I was quite entranced by that building, and it's a major arts center for Wales. And I wish I had a chance to go inside because there's an opera house and a concert hall and everything inside that amazing building. But the giant text on the front of it is just kind of perplexing. And sometimes in Torchwood, we'll sort of get, it's like we're almost going to see all of it, but we never quite do. And I just thought I'd mention it's perplexing to us because half of it is part of it is in Welsh and the other part of it is in English. And it's part of a poem by Gwyneth Lewis. I had to look that up, but what it's the Welsh part says, creating truth like glass from inspiration's furnace. Isn't that great? I can't say it in Welsh, but the English part says, in these stones, horizons sing.
Wow.
So let your mind be blown by that little statement. But yeah, that's what we're looking at every time we see the front of Millennium Center is those amazing words. Something else about, just the word nerd in me, of course, had to sit up and take notice when Max is saying, because I could not stop for death. And the solution, you know, Tosh figures this out, that maybe it's not the words that we're looking for in this collection of Emily Dickinson poems, but maybe it's the ISBN of the book. Mm. That's clever, but if you know how ISBNs work, that means that what they have at the police station is the exact same volume that Susie had when she was programming Max. There's lots of collections of Emily Dickinson out there. Okay. So
they're going to assume we don't know that as a casual listener.
But in any case, yeah, they just got incredibly lucky, and that's what got them out. But yeah. Susie likes poetry too. She, when she's taunting Jack, she says, "Oh, Captain, my cat." That's Walt Whitman. So yeah, she's just full of them.
Yeah. In getting the base open, did that feel clever to you? Because a lot of it was lost on me. I was just like, let's hear it, get this over with, find the phrase.
It felt precious to me. It's sort of like, really? Really? Because really, she could have programmed him with anything and then built that into the Torchwood security system. So it's got to be a line of Emily Dickinson. Okay, I don't know.
See, I think it would have made a lot more sense to me there if you would have seen her reading Emily Dickinson or having a book on the table while she was delving into all the things that she had done. That little bit of a nod would have made that so much better.
It comes out of nowhere. Otherwise. And it gives us the thing, and maybe I know that sometimes shows are not shown in the order in which they were written or shot, right? We see that all the time. But these are two episodes almost back to back where they get trapped inside Torchwood. And so I'm feeling like, well, this is becoming a trope of this show. Apparently this is a lot easier to trap them in there than. So I was kind of sorry that happened again.
And it happens again.
And so spoilers. But
hey, we got the set. We have to use it.
Well, that's it. Let's not go out running in the streets again. Let's stay in here. But if for people who have suffered abusive relationships, I think this episode in some ways has got to be kind of cathartic, because the abuse of Gwen is really there from the beginning. It's kind of like the racism in Dot and Bubble, that when you go back and watch it from the beginning, you go, okay, that was there from the beginning. Susie is manipulating Gwen from the start. And the editing sometimes, the juxtaposition of scenes, gives us this stuff. There's a moment where, Owen says she's draining the life out of Gwen. And we cut to Gwen bringing her a tray with biscuits and hot tea and a note saying, you know, field trip or whatever. And you're like, well, she is draining a life out of her. Gwen is betraying the rest of the team and everything. And then the one that really got me was when they're in the car. Gwen says, there's a little bit more color in your cheeks. You know, very innocently, Susie says, I owe it all to you. And she literally does.
Have you guys noticed a pattern of not or non-existent, almost non-existent, I should say, loyalty to the team? Because we've had two episodes now where members of the team have effectively betrayed the other members of the team for someone else. Ianto with the Cyberwoman, and then, of course, this one with Gwen and Susie.
Yeah, what was so interesting about this episode is that we learned the only reason Gwen can really use the gauntlet is because she's empathetic to what happened to Susan. Susie, and that keeps going up until the point, like you said, Lee, where she's bringing her food. Like, oh man, she still feels so sorry for her until she does it, and she finds out, you know, in that hospital room that, I'm taking over.
That pain in your head's just going to get worse.
Indeed, indeed. But what's not going to get worse is we're going to go to our favorite scene. Lee, you've already given yours, which was really quick again.
The CID people laughing at Torchwood, having to ask them for help. So that was pretty funny.
All right, Clarence, your favorite scene.
Oh, man, I wonder what this episode was rated, because my favorite scene, or I guess the most interesting scene to me, is when they pan around Susie's head and we see the gunshot wound. I was like, wow, that's intense. Pretty gruesome.
She's got a big old hole in her head.
And this may have been in the same part of a scene, but the thing that got me, that stood out to me more than anything, was when they went to quote unquote dig up her body, they just went over to the other side of the hall and opened up a cabinet and pulled her out. And there she was. Yeah. You know, you've got a freezer full of bodies lining the wall. That's how you decorate your walls. That's my oddly cryptic favorite scene.
And then they're running out of spots, supposedly.
Yeah.
You know, one day.
Yeah.
And I did not copy and paste correctly, so I don't have my favorite quote. But my favorite quote was, and I'm going to paraphrase it a bit, was when Susie woke up and basically said, "Jack, did you kill me?" Or something to that effect. So that was my favorite quote. All right, Clarence, favorite quote.
Mine is the right before the actual title prompt, where D.S. Watson is saying, "Looks like somebody wants your attention." And Jack is like, "They got it.
They got it.
With Torchwood written on blood on the wall.
All right, Lee, favorite quote.
Mine comes from the other end of the episode. "That's the thing about gloves, sir. They come in pairs."
Ooh, foreshadowing.
Oh, yeah, we got to shout out the, I'll say this for my rating. There's
a couple. All right, well then we're at final rating. So go ahead.
Before I get my final rating, we got to talk about how brutal it was with Jack mowing down Susie at the very end of the episode. Again, that exacting laser focus. I don't care. I'm just going to be the everything at this moment, judge, jury, executioner. And my God,
I will keep shooting you until you die.
The brutality of that scene, man. Like, oh my God. He just kept shooting. He kept shooting.
And this is kind of a rare moment of Jack just being an ass. When we learn that Max is triggered by the word Torchwood, and they do it twice. And then on the way out of the scene, Jack says almost over his shoulder, "Torchwood."
Why?
In the chat, the time scale says, "I remember interviewing one of the writers, Paul Tomlin, and that was one of his favorite laughs."
Which one, I wonder?
Yes, and says this episode was brutal. So back to final rating, Clarence Brown. What was your final rating?
I'm going to give this 4.3 Risen Mittens out of 5.
Sun gun.
All right. Lee Shackelford, what say ye?
Because I could not stop for death is a 6 stanza poem. I wanted to give this 6 out of 6, but I'll give it 5 stanzas of "Because I Could Not Stop for Death" out of 5.
I'm going to give this, because I think, this is, we always have good conversations, I think, but we don't rarely go this deep. So I'm going to give this 5 deep, deep discussions out of 5.
Groovy.
And you could just say life knives.
What now?
Yeah.
I'm joking. Go ahead.
Stun gun.
Hey, you don't want me, Clarence. I think you, I don't know. What did you just do? I just don't know. Maybe you tempted me to do something.
Oh. I knew it.
Just saying. So I'm going to be quiet here. You guys are my witness. You know, I'm not going to say anything else. I'm going to be completely silent. You guys are my witness, but I'm going to give this 5 silent witnesses out of 5 because I got to play that again. So there you go. And it looks like the time scales gives it a 4.7 out of 5. Considering that Larry Irby really, really likes this, I'm going to speculate that I'm going to give it 5 Larry Irbys out of 5 for him, since he really liked this. Well, gentlemen, anything else other than Wind Grace's 4.5 out of 5? Thank you, Wind Grace. Anything else before we wrap?
Nothing at all. It's been fun.
Not from me.
All righty. So for everyone listening or watching, thank you for being here. And Lee, I forgot about that. What do you like telling people before we leave?
Oh, we like to say, we know you got other things you could be doing, but you spent this time with us. So thank you.
Indeed. And Clarence, how could people find us other than not on X?
As always, you can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend. If you have a review idea or anything else you want us to know, you can let us know that at discussingwho@gmail.com or at discussingwho on most social medias.
I like that. Almost social media. The social medias are the most. And again, thanks everyone for listening. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.